Current Affairs.
This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring a discussion on key highlights of World Economic Forum 2026. The participants are Shubhamoy Bhattacharji and Sishir Sinha, economic analysts. The moderator is Arjun J. Chaudhary.
A warm welcome to our listeners and followers on Akashvani, as today's topic of discussion is on the key takeaways from the World Economic Forum 2026, which is being held at Davos, Switzerland. It is being attended by global leaders from politics, business, academia, civil society, and this is a five-day summit. And to discuss this in more detail, we are joined by our two experts, Shubhamoy Bhattacharya and Shishir Sinha. Shubhamoy, good to have you on this discussion.
Happy to be here, Arjun.
And Shishir Sinha, good to have you also on this program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Shubhamoy, let's begin with you because in attendance at the World Economic Forum at Davos, Switzerland, we have the Union Minister for Information and Broadcasting, Railways and Electronics and Information Technology. We have Ashwini Vaishnav. We also have the Union Minister of New and Renewable Energy, Prahlad Joshi, and the Union Minister for Skill Development and Entrepreneurship, Jayant Chaudhary, amongst many others who are attending the World Economic Forum. For the benefit of our listeners and followers, could you tell us, why is it that we have this annual summit at Davos, Switzerland, where such prominent people attend, including those from India?
Well, you know, that takes us back a long time. What the World Economic Forum, essentially, there's no, if you say, if there's any mechanical rule why it should have been in Davos, no. It was the rise that then happening at the height of one of the Swiss peaks. The reason is that it was a fantastic marketing success. The World Economic Forum wanted a place they could showcase as a place where the world's elite, that is in terms from the ruling establishment as well as from the business establishment, would meet. The timing was decided by the fact that it would be just in the new year, so before the year starts in the January to December calendar. So that timing suited perfectly. The white background gave a brilliant picturesque effect. And of course, Switzerland's famed ability to handle these sort of things was a precursor, was a very good thing. There's been lots of written about why the World Economic Forum came up in Davos. I mean, or rather, why it chose Davos as its headquarters. And over the decades, it has expanded into the place where sort of, you know, the where all the world's top leaders, as I said, both from the business as politics, assembled together to give their point of view of what's happened. First of all, a look back at the past. That isn't much as much as a look into the future, sort of trying to say what they estimate and signify and think is happening in the world and would happen in the past and would happen. So it's a sort of a, there are a lot of issues there. There are a lot of things. For instance, this moniker that goes around, the Davos man, you know, the person who's actually been there in Davos is invited to Davos because it costs a lot of money, obviously, to be there. And that means that they are the ones who sort of dominate and decide the world's economic agenda, the political agenda also. So it has been for, and from the time when India has liberalized, India has also been pretty strongly recognized, I mean, sort of aware of that there's a need to be in Davos and has often sent very strong teams to represent its case. In fact, from 2008-09 onwards, it started. And today, India, I mean, we'll talk about that later, but no major country makes it a point not to be seen at Davos. Yeah.
Oh, Shishir, let's ask you the next question because Shubhamoy spoke about the agenda, whether it's economic or political. Ashwini Vaishnav spoke a great deal about artificial intelligence and he deep dived into it in terms of the AI technology and investments, whether it gives a geopolitical edge or not. He also spoke about many other aspects of artificial intelligence, including setting up data centers, the cost of setting up AI infrastructure in India, the cost benefit of that. He also spoke about LLM, large language models, and on a lighter side, he spoke about, you know, how the World Economic Forum can be hosted by India. It can be called the autumn Davos as well. So Shishir, what's your thoughts when we deep dive into artificial intelligence, which has also become part of the agenda?
The World Economic Forum, the platform is important from two point of view. One is, of course, it is setting up the geopolitical agenda. Like this time, if you can remember, US President Donald Trump, when he spoke or softening his tone about Greenland, that impacted the entire stock market, global stock market. At the same time, we are also seeing many of the business leaders, they are talking about what kind of business prospects are there. And we, like India is showcasing itself so that it could get more and more investment, as well as attracting all kind of investment. So these are the two aspects. One is, of course, the geopolitical aspect, and the second one is the business aspect. Now, coming to a specific question about the artificial intelligence, we have established ourselves in the field of software. There's no doubt about it. If you go to Silicon Valley, all the biggies are Indian-born or originally from India. When we talk about software export, we have a very good number. When we talk about ITS, we have a very good number. We have good skilled manpower here. So now, when the world is moving towards AI, which is the next phase of the technological development, and AI is not something which is a very constant thing, it is evolving every day. So what we can do, that is what Mr. Vaishnav gave a blueprint about, that what we can do in the field of AI, whether we talk about developing the AI center or developing the chip or developing various kind of incubation as well as the experimental center. So this is one area where there is a huge potential, and what India can offer, riding on what they have in the field of software or in the field of technology, that is the idea of India. Now, coming to your last point about that, can India hold this? Of course, India used to be holding one summit which is called India Economic Summit, and that was in association with the World Economic Forum. Now there is a possibility that there may be new form, and when Mr. Vaishnav is putting this idea before the World Economic Forum, of course Davos and India, these two are the two different geographical region, but who knows, something may happen in India too.
Let's hear what Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav had to say about the five layers of AI architecture and the services that can flow from the economy of India, including applications of software, all AI related.
There are five layers in the AI architecture: the application layer, the model layer, the chip layer, the infra layer, and the energy layer. We are working on all the five layers. On the application layer, we will probably be the biggest supplier of services to the world, understand the business of enterprise, understand the working of that enterprise, and provide that service using AI applications. That's going to be the biggest factor of success or successful deployment of AI, because that's where ROI comes from. 95% of the work can happen with models which are 20 billion or 50 billion parameters. We already have a bouquet of such models which are now being deployed in multiple sectors to increase the productivity, to increase the efficiency, to increase the effective use of technology. Stanford places India as third in terms of AI penetration, in terms of AI preparedness. AI talent, it is number two. We are focusing on diffusion of AI. And in a very systematic way, we empaneled 38,000 GPUs, which are a common compute facility available to the entire population. Unlike in many rich countries where the big tech basically controls the access to GPU, we decided to create a public-private partnership in which the common compute facility is enabled by the government and subsidized by the government, so that entire population, all the students, researchers, startups, they all get access to it.
Shubhamoy, my next question is to you. Ashwini Vaishnav spoke about the base of technology which is driving India's growth, and India will soon become the third largest economy in the world. He also spoke about real growth and inflation, which has come down substantially, which is now being called the Goldilocks period. Could you tell us about what was actually said at Davos, Switzerland?
The minister, Mr. Ashwini Vaishnav, very articulately explained the steps in which India is handling the AI challenge. One of the first things that you'll note is that he has laid out very distinctively the five layers of the architecture. He has already said it clearly. What I'm particularly impressed with, and this is something that has also been reckoned with of commentators, is that the AI program in India is the biggest manufacturing come services sector industrial plan that India has adopted in several decades. This is a big, big ask that India is taking on, the government is taking on. Why so? Because it's starting from the application, the software, going on to the writing of to the manufacturing of the chips, to finally also deploying the service cases for AI. All of these are by each very big. The India government plan, as the minister said, is to enter all of them. It is something which, first of all, I must point out, no country which has gone into industrial plan of this scale has ever bothered to lay it out to the world that what is it that we are planning to do. And I think this is a very remarkable candidness that has been shown by the minister. Second, the very scale of it tells us that where we are heading towards, that what is the effort that is going to be made over not just 3 years, 5 years, but over 10, 20 years, even more. And the scale is just going to expand. This is, if you call it industrial plan, if you call it, but in whichever way you call it is the biggest ever sort of, government to public sector to private sector in the 21st century. And I must say, because we are talking about a country which is already the fourth largest economy of the world, to make a substantial change there, this is a very big thing. That is where the minister's articulation of the AI projection possibilities for India has to be put in. The other thing is, which I had said right at the beginning, that no country, when China went in for its semiconductor plans, when USA went in for it, none of these countries had actually had said, explained it out to the world that what is it that we are doing. We are setting ourselves up on a measurable platform, telling the world that, look, this is where we are, this is how we shall be doing it. It is great because it helps the investors to be certain about what India is trying to do. This is remarkable. As The Economist has carried an article yesterday itself saying that the Indian manufacturing sector turnaround has finally started showing results. This is the next big thing on the manufacturing sector that India is attempting. And so therefore, this needs to be both of these. So therefore, the scale as well as the explaining of it needs to be commended for what is being said. It's a remarkable public policy statement.
Let's now hear what Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav had to say about India's growth story, India being the third largest economy, and how the base of technology and manufacturing is driving real growth and lowering inflation.
India will become the third largest economy in the coming few years itself. The last decade of very transformational change which has happened in our country, and it's a very well thought through, well defined and very focused execution. All this combined with the base of technology that we have put, we can very clearly say that India is going to grow with 6 to 8% real growth and a moderate 2 to 4% inflation and a nominal growth of 10 to 13%, with 95% confidence interval in the next 5 years.
Shishir Sinha, my next question to you is again related to manufacturing, because you're talking about aspects of our economy which is driving growth, real growth, and lowering inflation, and more importantly, the base of technology that is responsible for this, also driving employment. Electronic ecosystems are being formed. Now you have mobile phones which are being branded and manufactured in India. Your thoughts on that?
See, of course, when we talk about manufacturing, the share of manufacturing in the economy has been low. And now our target is to take it at least more beyond 20%. And if you need it to be more than 20%, you need a lot of a scheme. And one of the scheme which has given a grand success, that is the PLI, which is the Production Linked Incentive Schemes. And we have seen how India has become the largest exporter of mobile handset to the world. In fact, if you take two products, one is of course the mobile handset and the second one is the automobile. In the automobile, we may not have be a kind of a scheme which we are providing for the mobile handset, but still the automobile sector is doing extremely well. The development of these two sectors are critical also from the employment point of view, because we always say that manufacturing is one area which is considered as the job multiplier. That means when you are setting up a plant, it is not just the plant which is providing you the employment, but also the surrounding things are also providing indirect employment.
Supply chain.
It's a supply chain. The second part is that when the goods are manufactured, that needs to be taken to the market and the inputs are to be brought to the factory. So there the role of services would be critical. So manufacturing is one area which is on the one hand giving you a job multiplier. At the same time, it is also boosting the service sector. So combination of these too, is very critical for the growth of the economy. And as Mr. Vaishnav was talking about third largest economy in coming years, so at this moment we are at the fifth place. And now at the end of this fiscal, which is March 31st, 2026, we are expected to be at the fourth place. And within 2 years, we are expected to be at the third place with more than $5 trillion economy. And that will need a good boost to the manufacturing. And somehow we are seeing that manufacturing is picking up.
Let's hear what Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav had to say about electronic ecosystems, especially the manufacture of mobile phones, but also domestic manufacturing, which also encase the India brand.
Now that we have a very substantial electronics ecosystem in our country, this is the time when we will be going for getting our own Indian brands in mobile phones. We have done all the homework that is required to be done. Today and yesterday we had significant meetings with the entire ecosystem which produces the thousands of things that are required to go into a mobile phone. And very happy, very satisfying progress. Very soon, maybe another 1 year from now or maybe max 18 months from now, we should have our own Indian brands coming out.
Shubhamai, my next question is to you regarding the techno-legal approach when it comes to artificial intelligence. Could you tell us what Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav had to say regarding bias and deepfakes and why we need a techno-legal approach, why we need a framework so that protections are built into the system, even though a lot of this is open-sourced and it's available to the public for their productivity?
Well, you know what he has said is very interesting, because globally, the development of AI is taking a sort of a position which wasn't anticipated earlier, in the sense that AI was supposed to be a single standardized model across the world. But as we see, it's not wrong in saying that of 200 countries, there are now 200 standards that's coming up in the world on AI. And obviously, a lot of that has to do with the ethical issues, the safety issues, the developers' rights issues versus the citizens' issues. All of those are coming up. The Paris summit, which was held in 2024, was supposed to clarify many of these issues. It has done, but it's not substantially. What happens is that India, USA, China, as the three largest developers of AI, naturally would not want any of the other two to be sort of telling it how to go about developing the AI superstructure, the AI systems. And this is something which the minister was pointing out to. So what he is saying is that the techno-legal model for regulating artificial intelligence, the minister is essentially drawing on India's Digital Public Liability, Digital Act that India has just passed in last year, saying that we will be looking at giving as much as space possible to the development of AI with the certainty that they can, you know, do any sort of experiments on the data, provided the data is sourced cleanly and the data is developed within the fact that it should be within India. Now, obviously, there are issues about whether data portability and all those things. But the fact is that why the challenges that come along is that some countries would say you have to allow data to be, there shouldn't be borders. But at the same time, they are not that clear about whether the data has been sourced ethically. And India is the largest country for providing of data on for any advances, not only on AI, but also on any other aspects of the internet. So now this issue comes along that if India is going to be the place from where data will be portable, then India should also have the right to decide that the data that is used is harvested cleanly. That means with the clear consent of the data principles. That is where the minister is talking about the techno-legal model, that law alone cannot govern the digital age. It has to be understood as a framework where both parts, the government on one side, the developer community on one other side, and the citizens on the other side, the three arms of the triangle, play their role and know each and know very well what is being asked for. So basically, that's very important. The reason I'm saying it is because there is a lot of pushback from, say, EU. Now, whether for whatever reasons, EU is not really a very major player in the AI development in the universe. But EU is coming up with standards which actually creates problems for countries like India, which are trying to develop the AI capacity. So these are some things which needs to be understood and made explicit, which the minister said. Yeah.
Let's hear what Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav had to say about the requirement of a techno-legal approach for artificial intelligence globally, so that downsides like biases and deepfakes are eliminated and taken care of through a judicial approach.
In case of technologies like AI, it's very important to have a techno-legal approach to regulation. It cannot be just a law that you pass and believe that everything will fall in place. You have to create technical tools and technologies to counter the harmful effects of, for example, bias, as Khalid said. For example, detecting deep fakes with an accuracy which can be taken to a court and be properly judicially checked. So those kind of things, you require techno-legal approach. We are following techno-legal approach, creating solutions which mitigate bias, which help in detecting deep fakes, which make sure that unlearning can be done properly before you deploy a model in an enterprise. So those kind of technologies we are developing.
Shishir Sinha, my next question is regarding skill development and in the field of artificial intelligence. Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav spoke about the cost-benefit approach. It's one-third the cost in India, for instance, setting up data centers. And he also spoke about imparting specialized skills to 10 million people. What kind of productivity are we looking at the foundation of information technology services in India?
See, we have provided software services to the globe. Now it is time to provide the AI service to the globe. And there the critical factor is that what kind of a skilling facility we are going to have it. And not just a skilling, but a skilling, reskilling and upskilling. These three components are critical. Fortunately, we have good Indian Information of Technology or IIT network. We also have the second layer of technological development. And now we are also going to have a center of excellence or center of specialized courses, especially for AI. So since we have proven record in the technology field, so that can be imparted into AI, and to fulfill the need for the global market, we can provide this skilled manpower. The best part is the cost. So if you go for a training in, say, US or in EU, and if you talk about India, the cost difference will be much, much lower. And the best part is that these students which are coming out from the Indian institutions, they are very good English-speaking persons. So that is one big advantage we have. They are also well-versed with all kind of what we call as the technical jargons and technical setup. So providing that skilled youth or skilled manpower to the global AI market, India has all the potentials, India has all the facility, and the best part is that the cost is very, very low. Every global company is looking to get those sources at a cheaper cost.
Shishir, my next question is also regarding skill development. Jayant Chaudhary, the Union Minister for Skill Development and Entrepreneurship, spoke about the India World Economic Forum partnership. He spoke about the launch of a skills accelerator to bridge the workforce gaps. He mentioned about TVET, which is a technical and vocational education and training ecosystem. Now, what is this?
See, basically, we have started this program, Skilling, National Skill Mission. And National Skill Mission was not just in the urban area, but also in the rural area. And that is giving all kind of what we call, say, skilled manpower, which the industry is looking for. There is also a facility of how to deploy those skilled manpower into those industrial environment. We also have PM internship scheme under which these skilled people are also getting trained and they get real corporate exposure. So the important thing is that the capacity we have to build it. Industry is looking for supply. How we can supply that, at what cost we are supplying that. Okay, in India, you don't have to think about that particular component, which is a cost one. Of course, globally, that is much more important. India, of course, it is important, but globally, it is much important. In India, what we are looking for, that whether that supply is provided, and that supply is also ready to go for the reskilling and the upskilling. So just give you an example that most of the civil services, they have what we call as the mid-career training course. So under that mid-career training course, they are going for upskilling and reskilling. And in the same manner, when we talk about those labor force, those workforce which are being provided, which is called as a skilled manpower, to the industry. Now industry has gone for another technological use or a technical advancement. There we need upskilling, there we need reskilling. So do we have the facility to provide that? Fortunately, we do have the facility to provide that, and that it was the Minister of State for Skilling, Mr. Jayant Chaudhary, is talking about.
Well, let's hear what the Union Minister Ashwini Vaishnav had to say about artificial intelligence, the one-third cost benefit that you have for setting up data centers and improving IT productivity in India, where these skills are being imparted to 10 million people.
The cost is practically one-third of the cost in most other countries. That is first. Second, having a bouquet of models which basically meet most of your needs. Third, making sure that people understand this technology, learn this new technology. Already we are going through a program for 10 million people to be trained on AI skills. Four, making sure that the IT industry, which is a very significant industry in our country, pivots in a very systematic way towards providing services to Indian companies as well as to the global companies, using AI as a very effective enabler of efficiency, a multiplier of productivity in any operation that they do. So that's a very systematic way we are moving.
My next question is to you, Shubhamoy, regarding the transition to green energy, which is driving industrialization, energy security and affordability in India. Prahlad Joshi, the Union Minister of New and Renewable Energy, mentioned about 267 gigawatt non-fossil capacity. You also spoke about solar manufacturing and decentralized schemes. What type of investments are we looking at for this transition into green technology, green energy in India, Shubhamoy?
Well, you know, as the minister said, India's transition to green energy, the two things that's very remarkable is that, first of all, it is not contested. Across the Indian political spectrum, across business, it is agreed that India will be transitioning, and that transitioning has support across everybody, which means that it can move faster. That's a very major thing, because lots of countries at the current stage have got hobbled, and in fact, we can look at, for instance, the example of USA, by the fact that they are going back and forth on whether they will make the transition and what stage they will make the transition. USA has, in fact, has walked out of the International Solar Alliance. Now, that is a remarkable, so the bipartisan support that is there for the Indian energy transition to green is something that is worth restating. The second part is that the people's buy-in of the energy transition has been done by some very innovative steps, like, for instance, the PM Surya Ghar Muft Bijli Yojana. Now, what does that mean? There'll be a rooftop solar system in 2.7 million households, which have been done in the last 2 years, and the target is 10 million households, 1 crore. Now, look at that sort of a thing, because what it means is that there are so many households who are seeing the benefit of the transition in their own home. They're not seeing it as a government support that is coming. This is a remarkable change that builds in mass level participation in the transition, that the people are part of the transition, which is why when the minister said that India has already achieved 2.67 gigawatt of installed non-fossil energy capacity, that doesn't surprise. It just shows that India is basically moving as it should towards the target of 500 gigawatt of renewable energy by 2030, and which most commentators are fairly agreed will be achieved faster than the deadline. That makes it a very interesting change, because it allows for people and the investors, as I said, this, you know, this has got both aspects to it. First of all, there is no pushback from the people. There is no pushback from any of the political formations. And for the investors, it is very clear that what will be India offering in terms of the energy transition. You know, for investors across the world, a very major question that's coming up in is that you're making a company. Does your company use green energy or does it use fossil fuel energy? Well, India is actually saying that, yes, you come along and I'll be giving you that much additional renewable energy. Now, that's something which makes investors very comfortable. And as I said, that the promises are clear. So do it together. So all of these makes it a very compelling case for investors to sign up for the Indian manufacturing story.
Well, thank you so much, Shubhamoy Bhattacharya and Shishir Sinha, for joining us on this very in-depth key takeaways from the World Economic Forum 2026 at Davos, Switzerland. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on key highlights of World Economic Forum 2026. The participants were Shubhamoy Bhattacharji and Sisir Sinha, economic analysts. The moderator was Arjun J. Chaudhary. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.
Current Affairs.